Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading MRT for July 16th, 2024. Energy Transfer, Phillips 66, joined PSP by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Permian Strategic Partnership has welcomed two new members this summer, bringing to 30 a membership that includes operators, midstream, service, downstream, and academics. Energy Transfer and Phillips 66 have joined the partnership, which has now nearly doubled in size in the 5 years since it was founded. We are thrilled that Energy Transfer and Phillips 66 decided to join our team. We have some exciting projects in education, healthcare, and workforce on the horizon, and having these two companies join at this critical juncture is exciting, Tracy Bentley, President and Chief Executive Officer of the partnership, told the Reporter Telegram by email. We are very pleased to be a part of the Permian Strategic Partnership alongside so many of our counterparts in the industry, Vicky Granato, Energy Transfer Vice President of Corporate Communications, said in a statement. It is important to our employees there that Energy Transfer is not only regarded as a valued business partner in the community, but also as a company that gives its time and resources to help build strong communities. We look forward to working with PSP on its important initiatives to achieve this. Rich Johnson, spokesman for Phillips 66, told the Reporter Telegram by email, Phillips 66 is looking forward to playing a role in the Permian Strategic Partnership's mission to strengthen and improve the quality of life for Permian Basin residents, including the 350 Phillips 66 employees and their families who make their home in the Permian Basin. The PSP's focus areas align well with Phillips 66 social impact focus areas, including education, safety, and well-being, Johnson added. He said the region also is a strategic growth area for the company, as demonstrated by its recent acquisitions of Pinnacle Midstream. Our company has had a presence in the Permian Basin since the 1940s, and we bring the perspective of a leading midstream operator in the region, as well as that of a diversified and integrated downstream energy provider with global refining, chemicals, and marketing businesses, Johnson wrote. Bill Johnson, Vice President of Midstream Operations for Phillips 66, will represent his company on PSP's board of directors. Since 2019, the PSP has committed nearly $160 million in member company contributions through public-private partnerships, leveraging more than $1.5 billion in transformative investments. These efforts have profoundly impacted the region's public schools, healthcare systems, road safety and infrastructure, and workforce development opportunities. Midland Fire Department responds to trailer fire. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland Fire Department responded to two travel trailers fully engulfed in flames this past weekend. According to a city spokesperson, the fire broke out at approximately 8:45 a.m. Sunday, July 14th, along the 4100 block of South County Road 1201. Both travel trailers were deemed a total loss. Additionally, a third trailer sustained substantial damage due to the radiant heat. MFD reported no injuries. According to MFD, the renter of one of these affected trailers is being assisted by the American Red Cross. MFD believes the cause of the fire was an electrical issue. No other information regarding the incident has been released. Two businesses destroyed in fire. Two others were also damaged. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. Odessa. Two businesses have been deemed total losses and two others have severe smoke damage after Odessa Fire Rescue responded to a structure fire Sunday morning. According to Odessa city officials, the blaze broke out at 9 a.m. Sunday at Payne's Gym in the Town & Country Shopping Center. First responders reporting having found heavy smoke coming directly from Payne's Gym. According to reports, the fire spread quickly to the common attic space of the strip mall and advanced to the north side of the location. An Odessa spokesperson confirmed that Payne's Gym and the Town & Country Barbershop are a total loss. Aaron's Rent-to-Own Furniture and more, and with Town & Country Drug, have severe smoke damage to their storefronts. No other information about the incident was available Monday morning. County to consider new tax collector speed limit by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. County commissioners are set to meet at 9 a.m. Tuesday, July 16th, for the second of its regular monthly meetings for July. The meeting will take place at 9 a.m. Tuesday, July 16th, in the commissioner's courtroom at 500 North Lorraine Street. Here are a few highlights. delinquent property tax collection, commissioners will hold a public hearing and possibly take action on hiring a new law firm to handle delinquent tax collections. Midland County currently uses the services of Midland firm Purdue, Brandon, Fielder, Collins, and Mott. If a contract termination is approved, commissioners will consider using McCreary, Veselka, Bragg, and Allen of Waco instead. Speed reduction. Commissioners will consider lowering the speed limit on South County Road between East County Roads 160 and 135. Drivers can currently travel at 55 miles per hour. However, after receiving feedback from the community, the county recommends reducing the speed limit to 35 miles per hour. Records fee. The county clerk of records is requesting that commissioners approve a $10 fee for the archiving of records. Project Literacy Contract. The Midland County Public Libraries is requesting approval of a contract with children's author and musician Lucky Diaz to make an appearance for Project Literacy. Project Literacy puts books in the hands of each first grader in Midland County. This year's book is Diaz's La Guitarrista. Keeping cool. Commissioners are asked to take action on approving chiller repairs at Library at the Plaza, better known as Downtown Library. If approved, all work will be done after hours. The slated cost is $11,846.99. Renting the Horseshoe. Commissioners will consider adjusting prices and rental packages for the Horseshoe. If approved, the major areas available for rent would cost $5,500 for the amphitheater, $3,750 for all pavilion halls, or $1,000 each for A and B, and $1,500 for S. $150 per meeting room, $1,000 for the education room, $2,000 for the main arena, $800 for the livestock arena, $500 for the outdoor arena, and $15,000 for the full horseshoe complex. Kathleen Kerwan Haney celebrates 10 years. Senior Life Midland Executive Director reflects on a decade with community. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Kathleen Kerwan Haney, the executive director of Senior Life Midland, didn't know what to expect when she went in for her interview to work at the nonprofit organization. Now, Kerwan Haney is celebrating 10 years at Senior Life Midland and said she wouldn't change anything about her journey. "I'm just so grateful that He, God, placed me right here when I needed to be here," Kerwan Haney said. "There's been so many blessings, not only for me, but for the community." When she applied to Senior Life Midland, Kerwan Haney said, working at Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center in Odessa, but she needed a job closer to home. "I have three family members that were very medically challenged," Kerwan Haney said. "Odessa was very far away whenever they were in crisis. Her mom was in the late stages of Alzheimer's, her brother, who had Down syndrome, was in renal failure, and her elderly father was trying his best to take care of them both." Kerwan Haney applied to the job and went into the interview not knowing if she wanted it. She went in because she wanted to learn about the resources that Senior Life Midland offered. After the interview, she realized it was the right place for her. "I started working here and immediately felt like I was at home," Kerwan Haney said. Kerwan Haney started off as development director, where she would raise funds for the agency for 3 years before transitioning to executive director. During her 10-year journey at Senior Life, Kerwan Haney has seen the agency face many challenges, such as navigating the COVID-19 pandemic and the ice storm in 2021. "We learned a lot through COVID," Kerwan Haney said. "We've learned that we really are so vulnerable, and we don't know what the future could bring." She adds that before the pandemic, the Senior Life team didn't know they needed to have an emergency items and food stored. They also realized that they didn't have enough storage space to build up an inventory. "That's one reason why we built our new building," Kerwan Haney said. "We launched our capital campaign in the middle of the pandemic." In addition to the challenges that Kerwan Haney has faced in her role as executive director, she also had personal struggles and losses. Her brother, Daniel Kerwin, passed away in 2015. The next year, she lost her mother. Her father passed away in 2017, and the year after that, she lost her best friend. While Kerwan Haney was grieving, she was diagnosed with kidney disease in 2019. However, Kerwan Haney found the strength to keep going. "I just knew there were people that were counting on me," Kerwan Haney said. "The things that I go through are small compared to what some of our seniors go through." Kerwan Haney's family qualified for Meals on Wheels, one of the programs offered through Senior Life Midland, and she held on to the memory of her father receiving meals. I remember my dad standing at the front door waiting for somebody to bring him a meal and somebody to walk to while she and her siblings worked. Kerwan Haney said, I remember that joy it would bring him and it would give him the motivation to keep doing it. Kerwan Haney said that her father's memory still brings her motivation to continue helping the community. Many of them, seniors, have hardships and we can just make their day a little bit better. Kerwan Haney said, people gave me that gift for my family and I want to give some of that gift. Kerwan Haney also strived for change outside of her workplace. She previously told the Reporter-Telegram that her brother had been denied testing to be put on a donor list for a kidney because he had Down syndrome. Kerwan Haney advocated for Daniel's Law to be passed, which would ensure that those with disabilities could receive life-saving organ transplants. Daniel's Law was signed into House Bill 119 in 2021. She also advocated to change the terminology used in state law to refer to intellectual disability so that wasn't offensive. House Bill 446 was passed in 2023. Moving forward, Kerwan Haney said that Senior Life's new building will help better serve the needs of seniors in Midland for the next 20 to 30 years. She added that Senior Life is always looking for ways to meet the needs of seniors and how to create programs that will help. I would really like to thank the Vogel family, Kerwan Haney said. They gifted us with the property many years ago, and they had a vision for this building to be possible. Kerwan Haney also thanked the community for their support. She said that any given time, they have over 1,500 volunteers that help deliver meals to seniors even during their personal lunch hours. She said that for Meals on Wheels to work, it takes at least 50 volunteers each day. Kerwan Haney said that she's fortunate to be able to work with an agency such as Senior Life Midland and that she's grateful that the board trusts her to lead. I get up every day and think, I get to do this, Kerwan Haney said. It's not just a job for me. It's a passion. It's a blessing and a passion. Mercedes dealership plan near sports complex. Request to sell alcohol at the Hemingway also approved. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. A new car dealership could be headed for a site near the Scarborough sports complex. Cavender Real Estate of Midland Monday received approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission for its request for an initial zoning of RR Regional Retail for 10 acres of land at the intersection of Deauville Boulevard and Arlington Road. Cavender intends to build a Mercedes dealership at the site. The site is in the process of being annexed into city limits, and the associated annexation request is to go before City Council on August 13th. A plat of the property will be required for the annexation process, and a preliminary plat was submitted earlier this month. After questions about traffic, commissioners were told the dealership would not have access from the south of the property, but will have access onto Highway 191 and Arlington Road. Commissioners also approved a request from Leonard Height for a specific use designation, SUD, with term for alcoholic beverages sales for on-premises consumption in a bar at the Hemingway at 2200 West Wadley Avenue. Height is acquiring the cigar bar and lounge. Height told the commissioners proposed hours of operation for the 6,642-square-foot bar is 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily, with proposed hours of alcohol service the same. Midland Sheriff's Office arrests robbery suspect. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland County Sheriff's Office reported an arrest after an aggravated robbery. According to a press statement sent to the Reporter-Telegram, MCSO patrol deputies were dispatched July 5th to the 8500 block of Farm to Market Road 307 in Midland County in response to a robbery. An MCSO spokesperson said that through an investigation, criminal investigators identified the suspect as 26-year-old Sayel Noel Gonzalez Ward. Arrest warrants were then obtained after Gonzalez Ward was identified. MCSO reported that on July 10th, the MCSO SWAT, drone and narcotics teams, and the Criminal Investigation Division conducted a search warrant in the 3400 block of South County Road 1071. MCSO said Gonzalez Ward was located, leaving the area during the search warrant, and was arrested for aggravated robbery and possession of a firearm by a felon. Gonzalez Ward was booked into the Midland County Central Detention Center. No other information regarding this case was available Monday morning.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, July 16th. Our view, council bears some blame in water issues. The Point. All the firings and running people off and then hiring unqualified people have taken a toll on the city of Odessa. Every time there is a waterline break in Odessa, Mayor Javier Hoven blames past administrations for neglecting the city's infrastructure needs, but we're starting to wonder if the current administration doesn't bear at least some responsibility. According to records obtained under the Texas Public Information Act, the current city council has budgeted millions of dollars to repair or replace some of the city's 500 miles of water lines and valves, yet only a small percentage of it has actually been spent during the last 4 years. What do we mean? Well, in 2021, $2.7 million was budgeted and $1.7 million was spent. It got worse in 2022. $3.7 million was budgeted and roughly $1.78 million was spent. Last year, $4 million was budgeted and $1.75 million was spent. The city sat on millions of dollars during those years and water lines were breaking left and right. In fact, 263 water lines broke from 2021 to 2023 for an average of 88 per year. So what about this year? From January 1st through June 30th, 92 water lines broke in the city of Odessa. That's right, halfway through the year, and we're already surpassed the average for the past 3 years. Remember the nightmare of Mother's Day weekend. No water for many residents for the holiday, and an economic loss for local businesses. Texas economist Ray Perryman, following that weekend, estimated the overall loss was about $4.1 million. The direct losses were concentrated in retail outlets and restaurants, although some spilled over to other sectors and households, Perryman said via email. During the last year, we lost 4.1 million gallons of water due to waterline breaks, and so far this year, we've lost 6.1 million gallons. We paid water crews $194,000 in overtime in 2023 and nearly $175,000 so far this year. Contractor Edgardo Madrid and Associates received just over $572,000 last year to work on water lines and valves, and they've received roughly $754,000 already this year. The situation is bad, really bad. But let's be real, there is plenty of blame to go around. The simple fact is our water lines are ancient by industry standards. The life average expectancy of water lines is 50 to 70 years, and many of ours are even older than that. They are going to break. The fact is, however, water lines aren't nearly as sexy as firefighters and police officers. And we agree that some past city council members likely passed the buck on expensive overhauls for fear of losing votes. But it is possible the city council has the same thought. Just look at how hard Denise Swanner, Mark Mata, and Javier Hoven pushed to use ARPA money for Odessa Fire Rescue and Odessa Police Department raises, ringing alarm bells about the number of first responders leaving for higher pay. Sidebar, don't get us wrong, we love and support first responders and believe they should all make more than they do, even with the recent raises. But records obtained by the Odessa American show those raises haven't had much of an impact on stopping the bleed. As of May, OFR had 42 open positions and OPD had 63. Hoven and company were well aware when they pushed for those raises, they'd gain a lot of grateful employees and more than likely voters. The fact that the ARPA money devoted to the raises will dry up next year is a subject for another day. Let's get back to the unspent waterline and valve money. We asked City Manager John Beckmeyer to explain how so much money could be allowed to languish when, at any minute, every Odessan could lose their water for days on end, as in June 2022 and this past May. As you can probably guess, Beckmeyer said he couldn't say. He only started last August. You and I are both speculating, and I appreciate it. It's a good conversation to have. I'm not at all saying it's not, but I'm focusing on the future, Beckmeyer recently told an OA reporter. I can't give you the rationale, he said. I can just give you we're doing a better job of being more attentive to what we have, and we're trying to do it smartly. Toward that end, Beckmeyer said, he and staff did a mid-year review of the city's finances and found $16 million. He found $12 million in an account that had been set aside for road repairs. The state of our awful roads is a subject for another day. That hadn't been spent, and he found $4 million spread throughout various departments. Was some of the found money the same money the OA found? Well, it wasn't rolled over into an account that was for water repair and replacement, and I know it wasn't because if it would have been, I would have used it right then, Beckmeyer said. Not to give Beckmeyer too much credit, it's a little early for that, but doesn't it sound like the city was in disarray before he came aboard? It sounds like nobody was keeping track of the city's money, and nobody was keeping track of projects either. More on this later. We asked Beckmeyer if it's the responsibility of city council members to stay on top of city staff's activities, large projects, and their financial details. He said they're only going to know what city staff tells them. Makes sense, right? Seems like days without water would be enough of a clue to clue them in. So let's talk about Crane Avenue. Beckmeyer said he plans to spend $5 million on the found road money on the $12 million Crane Avenue project. On May 14th, the council approved a project that will replace 5,500 linear feet of water lines and 1.2 miles of pavement. We just want to point out that the Crane Avenue project first showed up on our radar 2 years ago. The City Council approved the project in June 2022, clearly during the current Council's term. It cropped up again in March 2023 when then Utilities and Public Works Director Tom Kerr and Hoven got into an argument during a City Council meeting. Kerr wanted to bid the money and road project at the same time. Hoven thought that would be too expensive. Oh, this was the same meeting that Kerr got so frustrated with Hoven and City Councilman Chris Haney, he quit in the middle of it. He rescinded his resignation and he lost his utilities director hat 3 months later. He ended up retiring in September 2023 and taking a job with the City of Midland. All that experience is now in Midland. What a shame. So what's the point of all this? Hoven and company have been going on and on and on about past administrators neglecting infrastructure, dragging their feet, blah, 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 when they should be taking a look at all of this themselves. Why has it taken 2 years or more for the Crane project to finally get to this point? Why is it being paid for with found money rather than the money that was budgeted for it? Why couldn't this council learn from Tom Kerr? Are there other projects that should have been completed by now and paid for with the budgeted but unspent money over the last few years? We've got to wonder if things would have gotten to this point if we hadn't had an unqualified interim city manager in place and if they hadn't chased off Kerr. Not only that, but they chased off virtually their entire finance and legal departments. The finance people keep track of where the money is in the budgetary pipeline, and the lawyers approve the contracts for the design and construction of water projects. We think with the election approaching, it bears repeating yet again. They fired city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks in December 2022, which led to assistant city manager finance guru Cindy Muncy leaving and city assistant city manager Aaron Smith turning into a whistleblower and getting himself fired. Other key finance folks left after Muncy did, and Brooks' departure led to the majority of her staff leaving too. Seriously, if other councils drop the ball, the water ball, think about this council's decisions over the past few years and think about those times you had to boil your water before casting your vote in November's city election. By the way, $7 million was budgeted for water lines and valves this year, and only $1.2 million has been spent thus far. Beckmeyer assures us the rest will be spent. We'll be watching. Pfluger takes Secret Service to task. Congressman says all aspects of attempted assassination to be examined. Saying the United States was millimeters away from a presidential assassination. When former President Donald Trump was shot through his right ear while addressing a campaign rally Saturday in Butler, Pennsylvania, Congressman August Pfluger is having the U.S. House Subcommittee on Intelligence and Counterterrorism investigate all related Secret Service actions. Representative Pfluger, a San Angelo Republican who chairs the subcommittee in Washington, D.C., commended Secret Service agents for swiftly protecting President Trump in the wake of the attack by the 20-year-old shooter with a military assault rifle from a distance of about 150 yards. But he said Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle must appear before Congress to answer questions. I will question all decisions made in three critical areas, strategic, operational, and tactical, Pfluger said. My previous advocacy for protective details for former Trump administration National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien and presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy leads me to fear that politics is influencing decision-making. I will not stop asking the right questions. To that end, Pfluger said, Homeland Security Committee Chairman Mark Green of Tennessee has already requested the security plan that was used to secure the perimeter of the event site, including areas such as the building from which the shooter fired and communications between or among personnel at the Homeland, Department of Homeland Security, and the Executive Office of the President, related to any potential increase or addition of protective resources for President Trump's security detail. The congressman said the briefing material that was used by Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, and Cheadle to brief President Joe Biden about the attempted assassination of President Trump will also be required. Our nation was millimeters away from a presidential assassination, Pfluger said. As Americans, we must unite together and move forward from this tragedy. Writing Sunday, Pfluger said, Yesterday's events in Butler, Pennsylvania, were a tragic and dark moment for our nation. Like many of you, I have gone through a range of emotions, disbelief, shock, anger, sadness, and more. This event is a wake-up call to our nation that we need to unite together as Americans. The courage and determination of President Trump during and after yesterday's events were heroic. I am continuing to pray for his family, friends, and team as they process the events that unfolded. I commend the brave U.S. Secret Service agents for swiftly deterring and protecting President Trump in the wake of the attack. I am saddened to learn of the passing of an innocent attendee at the rally, Corey Compentore, who died shielding his wife and daughter from the gunfire. Corey was a father, husband, and beloved retired fire chief within his community. My heart goes out to his family and friends during this tragic time. Two other individuals were wounded in the attack, and are also in my prayers as they recover and heal. The congressman said he was calling on President Biden to step up and help heal our great nation. The temperature in this country can be turned down, and he needs to take immediate action, he said. Within minutes of yesterday's event, I mobilized my team at the Subcommittee on Intelligence and Counterterrorism to review U.S. Secret Service actions before, during, and after the event. I am talking to law enforcement officials, Chairman Green, and others to collect all relevant information and take action. The director of the Secret Service must testify before Congress as soon as possible, either willingly or under subpoena. Permian Basin contributes over $100 billion and nearly 854,000 jobs to the U.S. economy. The Permian Basin continues to grow rapidly, reflecting the region's importance as an economic powerhouse in Texas, New Mexico, and the country. This year's economic report from the Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, highlights the region's essential role in supporting critical government functions such as road improvements, public schools and teachers, police and fire departments, community hospitals, and universities. The report also emphasizes the area's status as the second lowest producer of CO2 emissions per barrel of oil equivalent among the major onshore producing basins worldwide. As a world leader in oil production, the Permian Basin is projected to produce around $350 billion in gross product and provide around 1,200,000 jobs for the nation's economy by 2050. The Permian Basin provides indispensable resources to energy security, making significant contributions to our nation's robust economy every year, said Don Evans, Permian Strategic Partnership chairman. As the world's largest secure energy supply, our region is fundamental to our national, economic, and energy security. Texas and New Mexico can promote further growth and support the American economy in collaboration with the energy industry through investment and expansion of our region's infrastructure. According to the Economic Impact Report, the Permian also contributed $18.2 billion in taxes collected across Texas and New Mexico associated with Permian Basin activity, 853,924 jobs nationwide, $3.6 billion paid to Texas's Permanent University Fund and the Permanent School Fund combined, 115% estimated growth in solar capacity in New Mexico in 2024, the highest in the country, with Texas ranking second at 76%. Investments in both wind and solar energy continue to grow in the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin is a leader in global energy production as a region rich with natural and renewable resources. Economies across the globe meet their energy needs thanks to the Permian Basin's 92.7 billion barrels of recoverable oil and 211 trillion cubic feet of recoverable natural gas. If the Permian Basin were its own country, it would rank globally among the top five oil producers. By 2030, the Permian Basin will contribute 50% of U.S. oil production. Although the Permian Basin is home to only 9.2% of New Mexico's population, the region produces over a quarter, 25.9%, of New Mexico's private sector GDP. Likewise in Texas, the Permian Basin accounts for 8.1% of the state's private sector GDP, despite being home to only 1.6% of Texas's population. This report reinforces the importance of the Permian Basin as a significant contributor to the economies of Texas and New Mexico. as well as our region's national and global economic impact, said Tracy Bentley, President and CEO of the Permian Strategic Partnership. Thanks to years of dedicated investment, strategic planning, and foresight, the Permian Basin has made the American dream a reality for hundreds of thousands who move here in search of economic opportunity. The Permian Strategic Partnership remains committed to supporting the basin hand in hand with every hardworking citizen who calls our region home to fully realize the basin's economic potential. Fire destroys Payne's Gym at Town and Country Shopping Center. Payne's Gym co-owner Laura Payne was in church Sunday when she and her husband received a call about what happened to their business. Payne's Gym, along with other businesses located at Town and Country Shopping Center, was scorched by a fire on Sunday morning. Around 9 a.m., Odessa Fire Rescue was called to a structure fire. Four businesses total were impacted by the fire, including Town and Country Barbershop, Aaron's, and Town and Country Drug. Reports from the city said that Payne's Gym and Town and Country Barbershop are a total loss, while Aaron's and Town and Country Drug received severe smoke damage. Laura co-owns the gym along with her husband, Jason Payne. Both were out at the damaged facility Monday cleaning up some of the mess. "Right now we're at a loss," Laura said Monday morning. "To pick up and clean up, I'm really speechless right now." Reports from the city of Odessa said that an investigation is now underway. While the cause of the fire is still to be determined, Laura believes it started with an electrical fire. Payne's Gym is open only to members on Sundays. "There were a few members inside, but fortunately, we have some of really great members who took action and called 911 and got everyone out of the gym," Laura said. As far as what the future holds for Payne's Gym, Laura isn't sure. "I don't know if we'll be able to go forward, to be honest," she said. "From my understanding, the building has been considered condemned where we're at, so that'll have to be taken up with the landlord. All of our equipment is gone. We're just taking it day by day, and we'll see what the future holds." Regardless, the Payne family has been grateful for the support around the community during this time. "We want to thank the Odessa Fire Department and everyone who came out to help," Laura said. "Our community has been surrounding us with love and prayers. It's going to be very hard. We miss our gym family. We've had wonderful memories for the last 10 years. The owner of Town and Country Barbershop did not respond to an interview with the OA. Holy Cross set to open new gym for kids this fall. Holy Cross Catholic High School's new Tomlin Gym is expected to be ready for August when school resumes. The campus is located at the Way Retreat Center in Midland. "The gymnasium is vital for the continued growth Holy Cross will experience," a news release said. After graduating its third class in May with 14 graduates and 78 students total, HCCHS continues to increase enrollment each year, creating the necessity for the new $3.5 million facility. Head of school Carolyn Cantu said they are blessed to have such a beautiful place. "It is so much more than a gym. It's a place for our students, staff, and families to gather. God has greatly blessed our school," Cantu said. "The girls have started volleyball practice, and the weight room is in use. The boys and girls work out in it, but not together. They will be installing wraps so the kids can work out, but people can't see in from the outside. This one is air-conditioned," Stephanie Hill, spokeswoman for Holy Cross, said. She added that they are still ordering concession equipment, like an ice machine. The gym, named for lead supporter Don Tomlin, includes space for maintenance and storage space, offices, conference rooms, classrooms and changing rooms, and lockers for the home and visitor teams. The high school now has football, volleyball, girls and boys basketball, track and cross country. They added golf, cheerleading, and baseball this year. With baseball, Hill said they decided not to compete in the Texas Alliance of Accredited Private Schools, TAPS League. They could take part, but Hill said this was their first year and the team members are still young. But it was a great year. They had lots of fun, lots of interest, Hill said. Holy Cross graduated 14 seniors this past spring and is expecting a smaller class of 10 this coming year. Then after that class, God willing, it will be close to 30-35, Hill said. The gym architect was Jason Dean and the contractor was Onyx. Hill noted that they have a very active booster club that helps provide for more than athletics. They help with anything that the classrooms might need, and they have just finished their Get on the Bus campaign. They had a big campaign for us to be able to bus our own students to and from athletic games, and we didn't have that before, so it's going to be a blessing when that finally comes in, Hill said. Permia Care implements new therapy for at-risk youth in Midland and Ector counties. Permia Care, the local mental health authority serving 27,000 square miles in West Texas, recently implemented an innovative multi-systemic therapy, MST, program to identify and provide in-home assistance to at-risk youth in Midland and Ector counties. Permia Care's new team is a result of the Texas Legislature's $32.5 million investment in MST, including $21 million to fund 15 additional MST teams across the state, a news release said. The program supports at-risk youth ages 12 through 17 and their families in need of intensive assistance, providing evidence-based interventions to ensure that children and adolescents avoid placement and or interaction with law enforcement. It has proven most effective for treating youth who have committed or who are at risk of committing violent offenses, have serious mental health or substance abuse concerns, and are at risk of out-of-home placement. They also provide family members with the skills needed to ensure long-term success. The four-therapist team, which began taking referrals on July 1st, is available to youth and families 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right in their homes. MST allows us to reach a population of children and families that we have never had the capacity to serve before, Todd Lassiter, Permia Care's chief operating officer, said in the release. It allows us to focus on issues that do not need to be tied to a mental health diagnosis and will give us the opportunity to keep kids out of placement and together with their families, utilizing evidence-based practices for at-risk youth. We are extremely excited about our implementation of MST and grateful for the technical assistance and support provided by the MST services and evidence-based associates in helping us stand up our new program. According to the release, MST is the only evidence-based treatment that has been shown to reduce violent crime among adolescents, bringing rates down as much as 75%. Services typically last 3 to 6 months. MST reduces delinquent and antisocial behavior by addressing the core causes of such conduct, expanding the focus of treatment beyond the youth to include the network of systems responsible and caring for them, including family, peers, school, and community. In addition to reducing future violence, the scientific literature shows the effectiveness of MST, with 9 out of 10 young people served by the program still living at home, in school or working, and avoiding follow-up arrests. Joint City Hospital meeting set on emergency services. The Odessa City Council and Ector County Hospital District Board will meet in joint session at 5:30 p.m. July 17th in the Denevlin and Larry Melton Conference Center at Texas Tech University Health Science Center, 801 West 4th Street, Odessa. After an executive session, the city will consider to take possible action on a memorandum of understanding with the Ector County Hospital District that the hospital district will compensate the city of Odessa as provided in the memorandum of understanding for fire and emergency medical services for the duration of the memorandum of understanding. They will also consider signing a letter of intent with Ector County to enter into an updated memorandum of understanding to provide emergency services in unincorporated areas of Ector County. Individuals with disabilities who require special assistance should contact the City Secretary's office at 432-335-3276 or 411 West 8th Street, 1st floor, Odessa. During normal business hours, at least 24 hours in advance of the meeting. Also, the City Council of the City of Odessa will meet at 8 a.m. July 16th at MCM Elegante Hotel, Caribbean Ballroom 1, 5200 East University, Odessa, to review a draft of fiscal year 2024-25 City of Odessa budget. They will also consider allocation of $25 million for the citywide valve and line replacement project from the Pioneer Natural Resources USA Incorporated and the Certificates of Obligation Series 2021. There will also be an update on Inspections Department 5 and an update on Planning and Zoning Department. Trump picks Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, a once fierce critic turned loyal ally, as his GOP running mate. Donald Trump named Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio as his running mate on Monday, choosing a one-time critic who became a loyal ally and is now the first millennial to join a major party ticket at a time of deep concern about the advanced age of America's political leaders. After lengthy deliberation and thought, and considering the tremendous talent of many others, I have decided that the person best suited to assume the position of Vice President of the United States is Senator J.D. Vance of the great state of Ohio, Trump said in a post on his Truth Social network. The 39-year-old Vance rose to national fame with the 2016 publication of his memoir, Hillbilly Elegy. He was elected to the Senate in 2022 and has become one of the staunchest champions of the former president's Make America Great Again agenda, particularly on trade, foreign policy, and immigration. But he is largely untested in national politics and is joining the Trump ticket at an extraordinary moment. An attempted assassination of Trump at a rally Saturday has shaken the campaign, bringing new attention to the nation's coarse political rhetoric and reinforcing the importance of those who are one heartbeat away from the presidency. Vance himself faced criticism in the wake of the shooting for a post on X that suggested President Joe Biden was to blame for the violence. The central premise of the Biden campaign is that President Donald Trump is an authoritarian fascist who must be stopped at all costs, Vance wrote. That rhetoric led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. Law enforcement has not yet specified a motivation for the shooting. Still, the pick is sure to energize Trump's loyal base. Vance has become a fixture on the conservative media circuit and frequently spars with reporters on Capitol Hill, helping establish him as the kind of leader who could carry the Trump's mantle into the future, beginning with the next presidential election in 2028. But the pick also means that two white men will now lead the Republican ticket at a time when Trump has sought to make inroads with Black and Latino voters. In Hillbilly Elegy, Vance detailed life in Appalachian communities that drifted from a Democratic Party many residents found disconnected from their daily travails. While the book was a bestseller, it was also criticized for sometimes oversimplifying rural life and ignoring the role of racism in modern politics. Vance's fame grew in tandem with Trump's unlikely rise from a realty television star to Republican presidential nominee and eventually president. During the early stages of Trump's political career, Vance cast him as a total fraud, a moral disaster, and America's Hitler. But like many Republicans who sought relevance in the Trump era, Vance eventually shifted his tone. He said he was proved wrong by Trump's performance in office and evolved into one of his most steadfast defenders. "I didn't think he was going to be a good president," Vance recently told Fox News Channel. "He was a great president, and it's one of the reasons why I'm working so hard to make sure he gets a second term." Vance was rewarded for his turnaround during his bid for an open Senate seat in 2022, during which he landed Trump's coveted endorsement and rode it to victory in a crowded Republican primary and general election hard fought by Democrats. He is close to Trump's son, Donald Jr. Vance is now a Trump loyalist who has challenged the legitimacy of criminal prosecutions and civil verdicts against him and questioned the results of the 2020 election. He told ABC News in February that he has been vice president. If he had been vice president on January 6th, he would have told states where Trump disputed Biden's wins that we needed to have multiple slates of electors, and I think the U.S. Congress should have fought over it from there. That is the legitimate way to deal with an election that a lot of folks, including me, think had a lot of problems in 2020, he said. Many states adopted emergency measures 4 years ago to allow people to vote safely during the COVID-19 pandemic, but judges, election officials in both parties, and Trump's own attorney general have concluded there was no evidence of widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election. The relationship between Vance and Trump has been symbiotic. Vance's book, subtitled A Memoir of a Family and Culture in Crisis, was embraced for its insights into Trump's appeal in Middle America, where manufacturing job losses and the opioid crisis had driven many families, like his, into poverty, abuse, and addiction. The tale of Vance's hard-scrabble childhood in Middletown, Ohio, where he was born, and his familiar Eastern Kentucky Hills region, also captivated Hollywood. Ron Howard made it into a 2020 movie starring Amy Adams as Vance's mother and Glenn Close as his beloved Meemaw. With his grandparents' encouragement, Vance went on to serve in the Marine Corps, including Iraq, and to graduate from Ohio State University and Yale Law School. From there, he joined a Silicon Valley investment firm before returning to Ohio to launch a nonprofit that he said would aim to develop opioid addiction treatments that might be scaled nationally. Ultimately, our Ohio renewal failed at that mission and was shuttered. During the 2022 campaign, then U.S. Representative Tim Ryan, his Democratic rival, charged that the charity was little more than a front for Vance's political ambitions. Ryan pointed to reports that the organization made payments to a Vance political advisor and conducted public opinion polling, even as its actual efforts to address addiction largely floundered. Vance denied the characterization. As a senator, Vance has shown some willingness to work across the aisle. He and Ohio's senior senator, Democrat Sherrod Brown, had teamed up on a number of issues important to the state, including fighting for funding for a $20 billion chip facility Intel is building in central Ohio and introducing rail safety legislation in response to the fiery derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Odessan Kode recounts Trump rally. Saturday was a very good day for Odessan Matt Kode until it wasn't. Kode was in Butler, Pennsylvania for Donald Trump's campaign rally. He spoke to the crowd and met and had his photo taken with Trump. Kode pumped up the crowd, speaking about energy and drill, baby, drill. He said it was the honor of a lifetime to meet President Trump. Kode was about 20 feet to the right of the former president in the VIP section where all the speakers, representatives, and other guests were when gunshots rang out. Former President Trump was shot in the ear and a spectator was killed and two others injured. Kode said he is still processing the assassination attempt. Still a lot of shock, still a lot of stun, still a lot of what the heck just happened. This was the first Trump rally Kode had been to in person, he said. The crowd was incredible. Let me tell you, the people in Butler, Pennsylvania were just exciting. They were electric. That crowd was great. There were 15,000 people, I heard, a bunch of oil and gas workers, some from Midland, Odessa, that came up for the rally, some from Louisiana, some from up there, some from Houston, farmers, steel workers, manufacturers. The crowd was electric. It was an exciting day. It was truly exciting, just a lot of energy and people just really excited about re-electing Donald Trump and putting American workers' families first again, Kode said. When President Trump was speaking, Kode said he remembers hearing one pop over his right shoulder. I turned that direction to look over my right shoulder and then heard several more. It all happened so fast, Kode said. I don't know if there were 3, 4, 5 after the first one, but there was one, and then a pause, and then multiple after that at some point, he added. There were screams, and then there were shouting. It was chaos, he said. He turned back to his left and saw the Secret Service jumping on President Trump to cover him. They acted very quickly, and of course I see the SWAT team, guns drawn. They were up on the stage and coming around the front of the podium, Kode said. I remember them swarming the stage and trying to eliminate any future threat. Then I remember somebody screaming, he's been shot, or somebody's been shot, or we need help. I turned to my left and probably about 10, 12 feet away, but up in the bleachers, but higher, was the man who got shot, the retired firefighter. They were waving and saying, come help, and we need an ambulance, or he's been shot. I didn't know what to do, so I climbed over the fence and just ran up there real quick, just to see if I could help that man. It was all very chaotic, Kode said. He was able to get near Kode Compenture, a 50-year-old former fire chief who had served for decades with the Buffalo Township Volunteer Fire Company, the Associated Press reported. Someone was already working on him. Everybody was starting to move except this young couple, and I was trying to get them to move. And remember, the young man said, we're the family, and so I said, y'all stay, because I understand them wanting to stay near their family. Then the state troopers showed up and the other local law enforcement, and they're all up in the stands checking to make sure if anybody else had gotten hurt or been hit, and they're telling us to keep moving further, keep moving away. But a man who I believe was a local Butler County Sheriff's deputy, because I'd seen him backstage whenever we were all waiting to meet President Trump, he was downstairs at the bottom of the bleachers on his radio trying to call in an ambulance or call in help. The state troopers carry the man out. The man had been shot. I just put that family in touch with that deputy sheriff. So he motioned for them to come down and join the man who had got shot as they were taking him, I'm sure, to an ambulance and then to a hospital, Kode said. He recalled he wasn't looking at the stage when Trump stood back up and the Secret Service had determined there were no more threats. I remember hearing the crowd roar. You could tell from the roar that it was an excited roar, like you would hear at a Permian football game if the Panthers had just scored a touchdown, Cote said. I remember thinking in my mind at that time, okay, he is alive and he is okay. I remember being a little bit relieved then. They were then told that the event was over and everyone started to move toward the exits. We all walked out and we all were trying to find our people, and it was awesome. We had a team around me that protected me, just checking on me like, hey, where are you? Are you okay? Tons of people started to call me and text, are you okay? Are you alive? It was wild because there was just a few people outside our organization and family who knew I was going to be there. So all of those calls started to come in, he said. I thought it was going to be the greatest memory, and it turned out that some good things happened, Cote said. It was an honor to meet President Trump. That is the honor of a lifetime. But that was a very dark day in our country that someone tried to assassinate the President of the United States. Like I've said before, I don't like a lot of Joe Biden's policies. But I never want Joe Biden to be hurt either. I always want the President of the United States to be protected, Cote said. He was supposed to be at the Republican National Convention this week in Milwaukee. After this, a couple of the plans changed, but also just because some other things are going on. I'm still hoping to be there, especially on Wednesday. I believe President Trump speaks on Wednesday night or Thursday night. I'm certainly hoping to be there, Cote said. An oil field truck driver and founder and president of the Oil and Gas Workers Association, Cote is currently in Baton Rouge, Louisiana for business. He started the Oil and Gas Workers Association in 2015 in response to the Obama-Biden era weaponization of the EPA, he said. That really hurt U.S. producers and service companies and cost a lot of Americans our jobs. We incorporated this organization on April 20, 2020, the day oil prices plunged to negative numbers in this country, Cote said. Man suspected of gunshot encounter. An Odessa man accused of threatening to blow a hole in a woman with a shotgun earlier this month was arrested Friday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a woman called 911 around 7:30 a.m. July 2nd and told police she drove around a slow-moving vehicle on West County Road and entered into the turn lane at 6th Street. The woman told officers that the driver of the slow-moving vehicle got out, yelled at her, reached into his vehicle, pulled out a shotgun, racked it, and said he'd blow one in you, the report stated. When she began taking pictures of him with her cell phone, the woman said he drove away, the report stated. According to the report, officers were able to determine from her pictures that the car was from Johnson Motor Company, and employees there identified the alleged gunman as Nathan David Bermea. Bermea, who had an unrelated outstanding warrant, was pulled over on July 12th, and a 12-gauge shotgun was found inside, the report stated. He waived his rights and admitted to being involved in a disturbance that day. However, according to the report, he said he didn't pull the shotgun. Then he said he may have grabbed it and put it back. Then he said he didn't know if he grabbed it, but he knew he didn't point it at anyone. Bermea is being held on a U.S. Marshal's hold and a $25,000 surety hold.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.